Welcome to the Gamers Haven Podcast, a gaming podcast for game masters of all gaming systems. So grab your dice bags and we'll get your game on.
But greetings out there in internet land. Welcome back to the Gamers Haven Podcast. I'm Ethan.
I'm Nathan.
I'm Jeremy.
And I think today we're talking about, we're going to start talking about science fiction, the science fiction genre.
Mansquito says hi.
Yes, Mansquito does say hi.
Yes, his name is now Paul the Mansquito.
Paul the Mansquito.
Well, have you asked him if he wants to be named Paul?
We don't ask him anything, because he tries to attack us every time we go into the room where he's at.
He doesn't try to attack me, he likes me.
I put a shot collar on him,
That's because you, like, beat him, people.
Am I not supposed to do that?
No.
They're people! They probably got families and friends.
How about I just start feeding them the Soylent Green, then?
Yeah, that's fine.
Soylent Green is people, too, you know.
I just put a shot collar on
him. Soylent Green is people?
Soylent Green is people!
Dude, you guys have it all wrong. It's called shot collar.
Shot collar.
Zorch.
You know, now I'll have to check out that Mansquito movie at some point now, just because of all this.
Yeah, I've never actually seen Mansquito.
I'm sure it's terrible.
I'm sure it's horribly bad. If anyone out there has seen Mansquito, please email us.
And let us know the level of atrocity that the movie achieves with its whole purpose of being in existence.
Oh, well, we've been busy the last couple of weeks. Really haven't done a lot of gaming, except for Jeremy's game.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I think you had a Halloween party, and then you had another Halloween party.
And then we started. I started school again.
Yeah, I feel the pain on that.
Yeah, this semester is actually going to be fairly easy. Did my first lab for the class. It's supposed to take 3 hours. I had it done in 15 minutes. So the teacher said, "Is this it?" And he goes, "Yeah."
Bye.
Bye.
Extraterrestrial trolls.
Great, as if aboriginal trolls aren't bad enough.
Extraterrestrial. They can survive in outer space.
They are trolls. They kind of regenerate, so what's lack of oxygen going to do to them? Oh no, they explode.
Oh no, they can still die of, a normal troll can still die without oxygen. These trolls, though, are immune to the vacuum of space, as well as having radiation resistance.
Jeez.
Well, how are they going to get superpowers if they're immune to radiation?
Yeah, how are you going to have radioactive trolls?
They're resistant to it. They're not radioactive trolls, they're space trolls.
Well, how are you going to get radioactive superpowered space trolls?
Oh, I'm sorry. There's two different templates. Extraterrestrial is a separate one. Then you have space creature. So you can have an extraterrestrial space troll.
Cool.
My guess would be any troll that was a space troll would more than likely be an extraterrestrial.
I want atomic orcs.
You could do atomic orcs. We'll make them mutants. And they can have festering sores.
You and those festering sores again. Is there something you want to talk to us about?
No, it just keeps turning to that page for some random reason.
Your book's trying to tell you something.
Trying to tell you something. All your monsters should have festering sores just to gross out the players.
And poisonous.
Not players. Just your ogres.
Yeah, not just your ogres. All your monsters.
Beautiful.
Beautiful?
In a horrifying sense.
In an absolutely petrifying, horrid sense of the word. When you have the whole group looking at you with that look on their face, like they don't know whether to puke or to laugh,
yeah.
You know you've gone too far.
And where your fiancé looks at you and says, "How do you sleep at night?"
Yeah.
With many beautiful women on top of a big pile of money. We record these
so long in advance. Just to give you an idea of how far in advance we record these.
Our website went live about a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
And our first episode went up, and...
Except when this comes out, it will be more than a week and a half ago.
Yes. Yeah. But as of when we're recording this, our website went up a week and a half ago.
To also give you another point of reference, Jack Palance passed away Friday.
Yes. Sadness to Jack Palance. I thought he was already dead.
Our condolences to his family.
I thought he died 10 years ago, but apparently I was wrong. Right. Since we've all been suddenly rendered utterly insane by this radiation here, we're going to take a break and we'll come back and we'll start the discussion.
Silent Breed is people!
Hi there, friend. Welcome to the Dragon's Landing Inn. Come in from the cold and warm yourself by the fire.
Wow, thanks a lot. It's downright cold out there.
If you're looking for something to eat, we've got a feast of ideas and advice for tabletop RPG players over there.
Uh-huh.
And in the back room, we have interviews with gaming industry insiders.
Right.
And out here in the common room, we have lots of good, hearty discussion about all kinds of RPGs and accessories. So, what can I get for you?
One podcast later.
Little mug of beer wouldn't do us any harm. No little mug of beer wouldn't do us any harm.
Visit the Dragon's Landing podcast at www.dragonslanding.com.
I am the supreme being. I'm not entirely dim.
Well, we're back. And today we're talking or starting our discussion on science fiction, the science fiction genre. I think what we, what do you guys want to start with as far as that? I think we want to dive into the established settings like Star Wars, Star Trek, what it means to play or run a sci-fi game.
I would have wore my Ewok outfit, but...
You're a bit big for an Ewok there.
There's two things. One, I don't own an Ewok outfit. And two, we'd probably be sued. Do we want to start on Star Wars then?
Sure.
We've got a lot of people out there who are definitely probably more... They've studied Star Wars a lot more than we have.
Yeah, but I think you'd be surprised. I think we know a lot more about Star Wars than you might think. First of all, I think that most people... There would be some people out there that would classify Star Wars as fantasy and not science fiction.
True. It's true.
Like, really, I mean, we talked about this in the initial one, in the initial start of this whole series. But what do you consider? What do you consider to be science fiction or sci-fi, as the jargon is now? But you know, what makes something science fiction to you?
It's going to have to be the science versus the magic, a technologically advanced society, whether human or other, where the technology, some of the technology is so advanced that while the people in that time period, so if you have, let's say you have humans, and they are so technologically advanced, they have ray guns, they have spaceships, they meet another alien race. Well, that alien race is, their technology is 1,000 years ahead of them, but they don't think it's magic. They know it's technology, it's just beyond them.
Right.
We're in another
same concept as if we right now took all of our PDAs and weird lighters and stuff and went back in time 100 years or 1,000 years, they'd think it would be witchcraft.
Well, my point is, if we only took it back, say we only take it 50 years or maybe 100 years even, some people think it's witchcraft, but some people would not. They'd say, hey, that's science.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, unfortunately, when it comes to Earth, we can't time travel back that far because we haven't advanced far enough for that to happen.
Right.
There will come a time when that would be the case. But right
after
now,
the Earth has been destroyed.
Unfortunately, yeah.
The point is,
instead of seeing everything that's above them and advanced as magic, they see it as, well, it's another form of science. And some games throw in things like psionics, mm-hmm. which isn't magic depending on the game you're playing. It's a scientific something.
Right, it's the power of the mind.
But getting back to Star Wars, Star Wars...
It's pseudoscience.
Well, it's pseudoscience, but if it's actually proven in a...
Now, most people actually consider Star Wars to be a fantasy. I know several people that would argue until they're blue in the face that Star Wars is not science fiction, but fantasy. What's behind that, really?
Well, first of all, it would be a long time ago in a galaxy far away.
I guess you
in
could
the hero's
say,
journey.
I'm more of
that
the Jedi.
Just a rip
before they said it was midichlorians or whatever, the Jedi were very fantastic. They were very mystical, magical. So I could see that. But I don't know. I wouldn't get into that argument. I think it's a...
We're talking prior to the episode 1, 2, and 3 stuff with the whole midichlorian crap.
Because at that point, they try to make it scientific.
And they suck the mysticism out of it.
Which I don't think, because it's supposed to be a religion.
Right. But with Star Wars, I think ultimately people think of it more as a fantasy-style film because of it it has that the hero's journey style stuff in it, where you have the mythology of the hero and the James Campbell.
You can also do that in a sci-fi game.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think Star Wars is science fiction. I'm just sort of trying to play the devil's advocate. With Star Wars is an interesting setting in and of itself. Any sort of established setting that you run in is always gonna be hard to do, depending on how you tackle it.
Well, yeah, it's very difficult.
Especially with a thing like Star Wars that so many people know about, that...
And it's so...
Yeah, you have to be careful as to what you do with it, because people already have their preconceived notions of the setting, of what happens, that sort of thing. That's why I think if you do a setting like that, you need to definitely make it clear that it's your own, whether or not you're going to take the movies or the books or the comic books into account, and whether or not you're just going to ignore it outright and say, I'm going to do my own thing, or this is set up, you know, 1,000 years before that.
Yeah, and you get into... We had a really good GM who ran Star Wars for a long time.
Yeah,
and
year and a
half. It was great, actually. And one thing that I've learned, and I need to... If I run another Star Wars, I need to remember this, is the Force is not very, very forgiving when it comes to what is good and what is evil.
There is no shade of gray.
There is no shade of gray. There is good and there is evil. And you either accept that or you don't. And... In a lot of other games, there is that shade.
You're not just talking about like giving out dark side points.
No, I'm talking about even more beyond that. Yes, in the game term, it is dark side and light side points. But even beyond that, there is a right and there is a wrong for the Jedi, not for everybody else. And so you have to be kind of careful with that, because sometimes you shouldn't run a Jedi. If you're just going to run a Star Wars game... maybe you should put a limit on whether we're not going to have any Jedis, or it's going to be a full Jedi game.
Right.
Because once you throw in other types of character, it does become very gray.
It's almost as difficult as playing an accurate paladin.
It can be, to an extent. Because there is no gray in that.
No, there isn't.
That would get you killed.
But you have to, if you're running a Star Wars game, and obviously it's going to come to be you're going to have people who want to be Jedis.
Uh-huh.
That's going to come into it. You definitely want to make sure your players understand the difference between a Jedi and a Force user.
Force users can get away with more, because
while
the Force isn't very forgiving, also part of it is the belief system, too.
Right.
Just because you get a dark side point for doing something which is considered evil, that doesn't necessarily make you evil until you reach a certain point. And then you throw another... How about bounty hunters? I mean, that's not a very nice... You are not doing a... You might be hunting criminals, but a bounty hunter, that's kind of shady.
Yes.
I mean, you might be killing people.
Depends on the bounty hunter.
And also, you have to look into things like... Star Wars gets so complicated because in the normal movies and such, people go, oh, well, the rebels are the good guys, and, you know, they're fighting this evil empire. Well...
If you look at it,
if you're a normal citizen.
I mean, you could run it as, hey, the rebellion are the good guys, but you could also run it where the Empire are the good guys, the rebels are the terrorist group.
Yeah, the normal citizen on the street.
When you think, we've talked about it before, so when you think about it, the Empire wasn't a bad thing.
It's just who was in charge.
It was just because the Emperor was in charge, it was a bad thing.
It was very organized. It was just like the Republic beforehand.
Exactly.
But if you're the normal Imperial citizen walking down the road, and suddenly... Your stormtrooper barracks or local police barracks explodes, and the sign of the Republic is all over. You're not going to say, "Well, great, this is a great thing." No, your cousin could be in there, your brother, you know, whatever. These are terrorists.
I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
And that also causes problems. That does get into gray.
Right.
And I always had trouble with the Jedi, you know, being it's either yes or no. And that's one thing that our GM did really well, is either yes or no. And sometimes it was up to you completely.
I think if you run a Star Wars game, you need to make it clear what you would consider. You need to make it clear and have a baseline as far as giving out dark side points and things like that, so you're trying to do it in a fair manner.
And also watch the players. And also, if a player goes too far out of character...
Mm-hmm.
This sounds kind of weird, but we had a player who was joking around like crazy, and with the things that he wanted to do, like torture this guy and all this stuff. Well, he's a Jedi. GM actually punished him for it. He said, well, If you're thinking this way, and we've already, his character already was kind of heading down the path anyway, but
He made a couple bad choices anyway,
and he got punished for it. He actually did get some more dark side points because of how he was acting.
My only experience
he was like 2 points
in
away
Star
from
Wars
overcoming
games.
His light side points.
Yeah, my only experience playing in the Star Wars games with you, I did run a Star Wars game based on the Feng Shui rules once years ago, but otherwise I haven't really run anything. I did play in a very, very brief Star Wars D20 game that I think lasted about a session and a half, and that was about it.
That was great. You played the drunken ex-Jedi.
No, that was in Jeremy's. This was in a D20 one earlier. That was the West End Games, Star Wars.
Was that
if I remember right.
I don't mind the Dice 20, but I like the Dice 6 one better.
It's much more epic. Mm-hmm. When you go, the I need to make a force roll, and I gotta roll 40 dice versus I got to add plus 35 to my roll. It's like
it just depends. The newer, the second edition, a revised one, is actually not bad.
Yeah, and they are coming out with a third edition or a third revised printing next year sometime.
And what's nice is, you can blend some of these things because, I like playing Force of Death more than a Jedi.
Right.
Yeah, Force of Death can get away with much more.
Well, you can actually follow that gray line instead of
yeah.
But Star Wars is so complicated. I know I also have problems with when it comes to space anyway. Because
it's so big.
So big. At least on a world you can say, well, this is one. And some people are going to argue, well, okay, do that with a court, Well, then just focus it on one little quadrant.
Ultimately, it depends on what type of sci-fi you're wanting to run. If you're wanting to run a sci-fi in space, a space opera-style game, you have your choice of doing your own setting, doing Star Wars, Star Trek, the upcoming Battlestar Galactica from Margaret Weiss Productions, Serenity. Mm-hmm. Any of those, I would have to agree with you on distances. It's so vast. There's a thing with doing a game and saying, hey, sky's the limit, do what you want, but it's always good to have limitations on you.
Okay, it's really pretty easy to control a teleportation spell because you can just say, well, if you try to teleport to this spot, but for some random reason it ends up over here, shielding or whatever else. You can sometimes do that with ships, but if the players really want to head someplace, unless you're going to railroad them, it gets difficult. It's a lot of work because they may want to just go out into the deeps of space and just explore.
Right. It means as a GM you have to be much more
flexible.
Saying, well, I want this encounter to happen on this planet. Don't specifically tailor it for that planet. Be able to pull that encounter up and go, well, it's going to happen here because that's where they're going.
Throw in your random asteroid field with pirates.
Because
stuff.
As players are prone to do, they're going to eventually go, well, we want to go to Tatooine.
Yeah.
And it's always going to be a bigger problem, I think, in a established setting like Star Wars, Star Trek, Babylon 5, where if they're familiar with it, it's like, oh, well, I know as a fan of the show or a fan of the movies, we can go do something over here on Keshik, or we can go over to the Narn homeworld and we can get this. But,
In
a custom setting, you don't have that.
One thing I've noticed, and I think this is how they kind of try to do it, is basically each planet is a city and or encounter site.
Mm-hmm. Just like if you were doing D&D or something.
Exactly. Now, that's not very realistic.
No. Well, you don't need to sit down and map out the entire galaxy and have the world, completely mapped out, saying, oh, well, if they go to there or there.
But and this is only from a human. Aliens can be completely different. But as we are human, we somewhat have to go off of what we see. And obviously on the planet Earth, there are thousands and thousands of different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why in a world fantasy type setting, it's nice because you have a full galaxy on one planet. Basically, you're just expanding that and saying, well, okay, this planet has sand crawlers, and this planet has, they're like towns or cultures or just one culture, and that's neat. But it sometimes causes problems in my mind. I just am like, well, I understand
the
work.
Of if the sky's the limit, it really hurts you because you don't know where to start.
Yeah, because just because the whole planet is one type of species doesn't mean the culture's all going to be the same.
Right.
Or the areas. But you can't, that's micromanaging, and I understand that.
Because some GMs like to do that, but in a space game, you really, like Nathan said, is you have to be flexible. You have to be able to adapt. You have to be able to spray the dog with Febreze.
You also have to be really on top of that when players want to go off on a tangent that you don't expect. You really have to be able to improvise really quick.
Computer malfunctions.
Use that technology against them sometimes.
Yeah.
They'll only do that
something we talked about in the horror podcasts was in a modern setting, you know, use that technology against them. It's not necessarily a boon. It can,
like that
it can be an hindrance, you know.
And
the cell phone.
That is one nice
subspace
thing.
Subspace communicator
about.
Would not work. You could fly through a nebula and all the ship breaks down. How many times in Star Trek did the ship get taken over or get damaged or something? You know?
That is one nice thing about having a force
out of like
56 individual.
Episodes, I think like 12 times.
Having a force individual on a ship. On a ship, because the force is like the GM just talking to them and can kind of force. Not force them. I want to retract that statement.
Guide
them into saying, hey, well, the force, there's a disturbance over here on this planet. Why don't you go assist them? You know, that type of thing. And that's a beneficial thing. I mean, it really depends on who you want to play to. Do you want to play the Republic, Independence, Empire? I mean, I haven't played in one where people were stormtroopers running around.
I have.
How'd that go?
Oh, it was a disaster.
Yeah.
You know, stormtroopers are the elite, you know, soldiers of the Empire.
But not
the
compared
Empire.
To the player characters.
Yeah.
All they know is killing in white uniforms.
And they have one stun trooper.
And the one stun trooper, yes.
Yeah. There she is. Get her.
Get Bob! He knows the stun setting!
I've studied a long time to learn how to do this.
It's you have, like, you know, 50 stormtroopers.
Oh, Bob's dead.
No, it's in the Imperial Academy with all the stormtroopers training. The one guy who says, hey, what's this switch do? You're the stun trooper! Because all the others didn't realize it.
Yeah.
The one who says, what's this, and shoots himself with it? Well, he's just an idiot. He's going to be like a moth or someone.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, oh, make that man an officer. Get him away from firearms.
But you are right. The stormtroopers are supposed to be the most elite soldiers, but not against the player characters.
Especially in the D6. From what I understand.
Oh, the stormtroopers die and die and die. Out of everybody. You look at it, compared to even the Republic soldiers sometimes, you're just looking at these stormtroopers and there's vast quantities of them, and you're like,
the best death scene I've ever seen for stormtroopers was in the first game I played. I was playing with an associate of mine, with our GM that we played with for so long, and we were trying to do a smuggling deal. I was a smuggler, and this guy was with me, someone I picked up for assistance. We got jumped by stormtroopers, and so we're running down the hallway and come to an intersection, and they come out of all four intersections and surround us. And they're like, halt! And they raise their blasters. We both hit the deck as they opened fire, and they ended up wasting like three-fourths of their own troopers by shooting themselves. It's like,
in that game, what happened is most of us were Jedi. And you would have my little Jawa would run down a hall.
It smells like.
And these stormtroopers would pop out, and he'd just be like, wah, 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 and just turn around, and there's just bodies, these severed arms, and he's just like, what? You can't, what? But then you get into...
He smelled like almonds.
He smelled like almonds. Jawa smelled like almonds.
No, most of them smell like ash. Yours smelled like almonds, which was why your guy got
That's
kicked
true.
Out of the
He was
tribe.
A sham, and he got kicked out of the tribe, because he smelled like almonds. But
he smelled nice. Everybody else smelled.
But then what happened, though, is then you have, like, the dark stormtroopers. Those are the ones who've been corrupted by the dark side.
Oh,
or,
my God, those things were hard.
Though, and if you ran into a Jedi, an enemy Jedi, that's
where
things...
We started losing limbs at that point, didn't we?
Well, we got messed up. But I remember one fight with these dark stormtroopers of some sort.
Force blast to my chest
and we were lobbing... thermal detonators with the force at these things to stop them. And it took two or three thermal detonators to kill them as they came rush. And all these little rebel soldiers are like, holy crap, we're all going to die! And it's just us, these little Jedi, and then our bounty hunter. And our bounty, it was, do you remember Wookiee?
Yes.
Our bounty hunter.
Freaking nasty!
He was all, like, he had cybernetics, he had these weapons, and I don't remember what they're called, but these weapons that could fight lightsabers?
force weapons.
There's some sort of force weapon.
Force pie.
He was using force pie. Nasty. And he
peeled the armor off a dark trooper.
Peeled it off and... Oh, it was a
lot going.
It's so epic. It can be so epic if you have the right GM. And
that was the last.
And I just haven't found another GM.
So what you're saying, as far as for a Star Wars game, or really for, let's attune this more to just the generic sci-fi, is if you're doing for a space opera or anything like that, do you want to make it go for an epic feel, or do you want to go for, like, the Firefly feel, where it's, you're just out there in the black.
Again,
and,
it depends on the setting.
Right. Yeah.
Like, right now, well, okay, I mean, I know we need to move on from Star Wars, but Star Wars...
It needs to be epic.
Even if it's a little epic. Even if it's a tiny little epic of just a couple, you know, guys on a planet. It's your own epic. It needs to be epic. So anyway, we should move on beyond Star Wars.
Star Trek.
Yes. We'll jump from one end of the spectrum to the other, I should say. Star Trek, I think, takes a lot more of the science. Where you have Star Wars takes more of the fantastic into account, where you have the Jedi and all this. Star Trek is much more grounded in science.
Yeah, a lot of the technology is a possible technology in the future.
Not even that, but they go out of their way to explain things scientifically. That you have the dilithium chambers, you know, matter transport, warp drive. I mean, you can go by technical readouts, very sophisticated technical readouts.
And
they
are so advanced from us. The great thing about it is we can't honestly say it doesn't.
It's much more a series, depending on what you want to do with Star Trek, it can be a series of exploration.
Yeah,
you could go with Deep Space Nine style where you're
it's not as rough.
Parked in a...
This is one thing I've always looked at.
It does lend itself to episodic content.
Star Wars...
Yes, you're right.
This is a great example. Star Wars ships are rough. If you look at a Star Wars ship...
If you
look at a Star Trek ship.
Oh, they're so sleek.
It's something that Ridley Scott pointed out when he did Alien. Was one thing he liked about Star Trek was that it was a future that seemed lived in,
mm-hmm.
Whereas Star Trek didn't seem lived in.
Star Wars was
Star Wars was lived in. Yeah. Star Trek was not.
It's a different type of future. It's a future I think we could get to.
Star Trek is much more squeaky clean and utopian.
We could get to that.
Star Wars, if we could say, is even a bit more dystopian.
Yeah, it's considerably more dystopian than...
It is not equal. It is not.
But there's still money.
I
don't care what people say about
money.
Star Trek is that there's no money. There is money.
There's
gold plus platinum.
There's
credits.
Trading
and bartering.
Yeah.
But.
Oh, I like Star Trek. I've never played a Star Trek role playing game.
Neither have I. I'd like to at some point in time.
I honestly can say I've never played in a Star Trek.
Now, this is not against any LARPers, but I was scared by some crazy Star Trek LARPers who chased me away at Gen Con. I gotta say, if you are LARPing, please, do not try to force your LARPing down someone else's throat who's just trying to eat breakfast.
Yeah.
It doesn't work
out. That's not good.
No. Other than that...
But with Star Trek, my biggest problem with as far as if you want to run a game in Star Trek, you get that... With the amount of science that's available to back Star Trek up is you have so much more you can do that the players... You don't really want to let the players fall into a techno-babble a type of a game where they can explain things away through technology and go, well, you know, let's do this, 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 and this. That'll solve everything. You want to still have that conflict. You want to still have some characters in there. Of course, I'm sort of... Now, I'm not speaking off of experience. I've never run a Star Trek game, never even played in one. But Star Trek is definitely an interesting reverse to Star Wars.
I certainly do like the setting. I've always liked Star Trek. But I unfortunately, as is with Jeremy and Ethan, none of us have actually had a chance to actually play in one.
So as far as I know, there was never really good Star Trek RPGs available.
Well, apparently there was a West End one, wasn't there, for a little while?
I don't think. West End only did Star Wars. Star Trek was put out by...
one of the earlier
there
ones.
There were so many different ones. There's Prime Directives. There was the Starfleet Battles game. I think FASA put it out originally. And then Decipher had it for a while. I think they still do. But I haven't heard too many good things about the Decipher Star Trek games. If anyone has heard anything about those, please let us know.
Yes, please. Send us an audio so we can post it on the air and... because, like we said, we don't have a whole lot of experience with the system.
We can only talk about like the actual setting,
right?
In the sense of the world, and
but we're getting stuck on space travel. There's sci-fi is such a broad. It is such a broad genre in and of itself. Is you can really go really anywhere with it. Dimensional travel, space travel,
time travel,
earthly travel, where you know, journey to the center of the earth. Where generic stuff, you know, like D20 Future, GURPS, any of the GURPS systems, Hero systems, anything like that.
Well, then there's something else. SG-1. Stargate SG-1.
Mm-hmm. It's space travel, but not space travel.
They're really. I mean, later on in the series, they do get spaceships, but early on, it's just us. It's us normal people who have some technology going into very advanced areas.
Right.
With the Gauld, and please forgive me if I do mispronounce that. I know there are a lot of Stargate fans out there. I will not say I know everything about it. I have the Stargate SG-1 role playing book. I haven't run it yet. I would like to at some point. It's a beautiful book. But yeah, it's us. If we found something like that,
we learned to manipulate it.
And we learned to manipulate it. It's us. It is sci-fi, but it's technology on Earth. It's still technology we understand. It's just when we go to these other places.
It's still technology, but it's ancient technology that's still futuristic
and
to
us. But the people in it don't say it's magic.
I'd say if you're running a sci-fi game, especially with Stargate, Star Trek, Star Wars, really do your best not to focus on the setting. Focus on the characters.
And the society, and
that's those sort of interactions. Because if you're focusing on making a lightsaber, you're focusing on building a new warp drive. It's going to get real boring.
Yeah,
real
you don't
want
to do that. I mean, they can use their skills. Also, something else to focus on. Stargate, I know, has kind of gone beyond that. But Star Wars and Star Trek do this very well. Death is a very real thing. I mean,
right.
People do not come back when they die. Unlike in a lot of fantasy.
Especially Star Trek. With Star Trek is you have this very marvelous medical technology, but people will
if
still
you
die.
You die.
Plus, don't even limit yourself to earthly diseases. You know, what's to say you're not going to run into a strange disease from another planet or another world?
But I think that does, I mean, that does, that's a big difference because, you know, in a fantasy game, most GMs will allow resurrection. If you get the magic, fine.
But in a sci-fi, you are working with something that's equivalent of being magical with this technology.
At the same
but
time,
still,
a lot of times,
it's not going to bring people back.
Unless
from the dead.
It's certain, and you may run into. I mean, sci-fi could do that, but I think you need to make it really focus on that. One, they might not have. There might not be any religious views. Or two, you know, death is pretty sudden, pretty final. Now, Star Wars has the added thing that sometimes the Jedi souls come back
and
that's fine. But Star Trek, I've never seen that.
Really, they never touched much in Star Trek on the mystical aspect of the universe. That was much more a Star Wars thing.
But I mean, that's something that can change, and you also have to be careful as a GM too. You know, you have all your medical stuff, but you got to be careful because your players will die. I mean, getting your ribs vaporized from a laser cannon. I mean, you know,
it's
pretty final.
But let's see here. I mean, as far as science fiction is, we've sort of touched on the space opera and where you're traveling around in the stars. There are a lot of different things to think about when you're wanting to do a sci-fi game. There's a cyberpunk style game, which has no space travel in it whatsoever.
Nope.
But cyberpunk, Shadowrun,
anything like that.
Although Shadowrun has some fantasy elements to it, it's still explained though. Interesting to me is it still explains it in a scientific manner. They're not dwarves, they're not elves, they're not orcs, they're mutants, they're metahumans.
It's kind of a quasi. I mean, it's a mixture, and some fantasy settings do that too.
Mm-hmm.
Where
like
magic becomes
settings.
Science. Yeah, magic becomes a science, but still magic.
Yeah, a good example of that was Arcanum.
Arcanum, yeah.
That was an incredibly good...
Glitchy! are you talking about...
Arcanum of Steelworks and Magic?
Oh, yeah.
Incredibly glitchy game.
Fun!
Very good setting and premise.
Yeah. But Jules Verne. That's sci-fi.
Oh, yeah.
That setting, Doctor Who.
Doctor Who.
Yeah, all the time travel.
We're sort of stuck also on the future. Sci-fi doesn't necessarily have to be set in the future. You brought up steampunk.
Yeah.
That could be turn of the century, Victorian age, but you have this steam technology all of a sudden. That's
if it's completely
science fiction.
A good example of that is Steamboy.
Steamboy, right, right. Any number of steampunk games out there.
Yeah.
Any number of them. Actually, I saw... there's a GURPS Cthulhu Punk.
Yeah.
Cthulhu steampunk book, apparently.
That's creepy.
I'm sorry.
Which would be odd.
Yeah. Taking Cthulhu on with a steam wagon.
Mm-hmm. But I think science fiction is... science fiction doesn't try to elicit, generally does, unless you're trying to mix it with other genres, doesn't try to elicit... a fear effect or any kind of thing like that, unless you're trying to go for that, just as an overall
event horizon.
Event horizon, alien, anything like that. Yeah. But well, really back to cyberpunk, I think that merits a lot of discussion where you have such great films as Blade Runner and you know, things like that are so mind bogglingly good that
Total Recall
where Matrix. You have this future, this dystopian yes. future, and living and existing in it. Blade Runner, in and of itself, is a detective story,
mm-hmm.
but it's set against the backdrop of, you know, this dark, ominous future with replicants, you know.
Yeah. Well, and then the Matrix, where everybody's being,
right.
Their bodies are being sucked.
When you do sci-fi, don't start thinking in the fantastical as far as a plot line. Oh, they have to go get these neutron bombs. Da, da, da. Don't think of that. Think in still in terms of a humanistic story. You know, Blade Runner. He's investigating a murder. Simple as that, and it just leads him on to finding he has to track down these replicants. It's a very simple story, but it's still that 1940s
guy noir.
Yeah, that this future noir that was going on with that, and that's really interesting. Interesting thing to try to actually do.
Yeah, and I don't know how many people out there like Blade Runner, and I'm sure we'll catch flack for this. Ethan likes the director's cut.
Yeah.
I don't really care for the director's cut. I like the original version with the voice in the background explaining everything. I know tons of people hated that, which is why they released the director's cut, but
well,
I liked that.
Well, next year we're going to get two more versions of the movie, so yeah. We'll see which ones of those we like.
Yeah.
And we're going to put them in a steel cage and let them duke it out?
Yep.
Probably, yes.
Okay.
This Sunday on pay-per-view.
But, I like the original version of Blade Runner.
But let's stick with the future thing. Is you go with the utopian future and the dystopian future, eliciting that sort of effect, I would say...
Running Man.
Go.
It's a great
dystopian movie.
Read some of these stories. Running Man is based on a story by Stephen King under his pseudonym.
But the
Running
Man is
one of his
I mean, that's
stories.
A very... That's
Philip K. Dick.
Philip K. Dick, yeah.
Yeah, any Philip K. Dick. Philip
William
Farmer.
William Gibson, Stephen... Neal Stephenson, excuse me.
There's a Ted... Ted something.
You know, what we're his name. How about...
We'll put a couple authors in our show in the schnotes.
Yeah,
Arthur C. Clarke.
How about that?
Isaac Asimov.
How about that Snow Crash?
Neal Stephenson.
Snow Crash. Great.
Definitely, if you're doing a sci-fi game, is do your research. You know, don't hop into it sort of on a wing and a prayer. Do have an idea of what the universe is like. Do have an idea. Because you are building, more or less, you're building something from scratch. Because even in a fantasy setting, you're still going to at least be somewhat grounded in reality. You're still going to think more European history or, you know, medieval history, that sort of concept before you jump into a fantasy setting. Most people are going to do that. Sci-fi, on the other hand, you're going to turn around and you're going to go, well, what can I do differently? You're going to say... You know, how are the cops different? What's the society like now? What technology is out? What do people do for entertainment? There's so much out there now. And, you know, watch some movies. Get an idea of the type of a setting you want to run. Go ahead.
I just remembered a movie, Minority Report.
that's based on a Philip K. Dick book or short story or something. I haven't read that one, actually. It's a good movie. I love the movie. But the
movie was very good. I very much enjoyed it.
Not that we're huge Tom Cruise fans, but, you know, guy, isn't
it? Steven Spielberg, for the most part.
Oh, yeah, for the most part, he's good. I mean, just go see Munich.
Just pass on AI unless you want to be horribly depressed.
Yeah,
Munich was depressing, too.
Well, yeah, but it was incredibly well done.
It was more depressing than AI.
AI just found boring as all
I was impressed by Munich because it was more realistic. And
well, Munich pretty much it had to end the way it did because that's how it really ended.
I know.
Yeah.
Ended.
Well, yeah.
But.
As far as back to sci-fi, guys. I think science fiction is definitely an interesting thing to at least attempt.
Definitely come prepared, though.
Oh, most certainly come prepared. Don't, like I said earlier, don't map it out exactly, but have a good idea of where things are, what things do, just so you can have a baseline. And if you come up with something off the cuff, be sure to write that down, because it might come into play later. You never know.
Play some other sci-fi type games. Play Masters of Orion 2. You know, play some of the Star Wars games or
like
Star Trek games.
Game.
Play some of the board games. Mm-hmm. You know, just play a bunch of those because that will help with the role playing. It'll give you some
like
ideas.
If you're gonna play a Star Wars game, watch the Star Wars movies. Read some of the books. Look at some of the comics.
Play some of the games if you can.
Play some of the games. Try to get that feel of the what kind of a Star Wars game or what kind of a Star Trek game or Stargate SG-1 game you want to run. Cyberpunk, obviously, you have Blade Runner or anything like that.
And there's also a Blade Runner computer game if you can find it. It's incredibly good. It'll put you right in the mood for it.
Vaguely right.
I have a copy of it still. I found
it in my storage box. You know, we haven't really talked about, like, the Planet of the Apes type sci-fi.
That's also dystopian future.
Yeah, it's,
There's actually
post-apocalyptic,
which
is still
new
sci-fi.
TV show that's been on Jericho, which is just the start of this post-apocalyptic thing.
The Planet of the Apes,
The day after, Boy and His Dog, you know, Mad Max. Mm-hmm. This takes the whole Star Trek idea, flips it on its ear, and says, well, what if it's the exact opposite?
Throws in some mutants here and there.
Right. There's a game that Green Ronin Publishing put out called Damnation Decade that is a D20 modern setting book that actually tries to emulate the 1970s dystopian sci-fi movies. Or the 1960s and 70s.
Like Logan's Run.
Logan's Run, Soylent Green, Omega Man, Colossus the Forbin Project, Boy and His Dog, those style of films.
I didn't know Boy and His Dog was filmed in the 70s.
I think it was late 70s or early 80s.
Really?
I can't remember, honestly. But it's that feel of a genre. If you're running a post-apocalyptic game,
You could also, looking at different games, Mech Warrior mm-hmm. or Battletech, if you want a more, maybe not an individual character, but like a mech or a clan type game.
I've never played Mech Warrior, I've just played the Battletech.
Mech Warrior is okay, it's just a lot crappier when your little soldier runs out there and...
Get squashed.
And Battletech, Crescent Hawk's Inception on the Commodore 64 was awesome.
But that's just another sci-fi. That's another sci-fi, giant robots duking it out. That's basically what it is.
MechWarrior, the first MechWarrior was incredibly good, too. I can't remember the surname of that. There's MechWarrior 2.
MechWarrior 2. I remember MechWarrior, the first one, was very rudimentary, like VGA, EGA, VGA graphics.
EGA.
EGA. Oh, yeah, what's VGA, that? Yeah. What's that game that you found online?
We're going to go to Megamech.
Megamech.
Which is megamech.sourceforge.net. I'll put it in the notes. But it's Battletech, basically.
But free, and
it's an online. You play against people. You can play against friends online for free, and it's basically the tabletop Battletech miniatures game. Very rudimentary graphics, but it's free, and hey, it's really nice. Mm-hmm. It all depends on. We keep saying this, but it depends on what you're going to run. If you're going to go for the post-apocalyptic future, a few things you want to think about before you dive into it is, well, what are the players playing? What are they going to be running up against? What's the environment like? If you're out in the middle of Kansas, you know, what are you going to have? What are you not going to have? What's a commodity all of a sudden?
Water.
Water, looking at Mad Max, gasoline for your cars. Mm-hmm. That would be a much... It also depends on where you're setting it. Is if you're going to be running a post-apocalyptic game in the United States, in the Great Plains of the U.S., gasoline's going to be a big thing because you got to get around. If you're running it in a cityscape, it's not going to be such a big thing because you can walk.
Yeah, you just have to worry about mutants and cannibals.
Yeah. Or if you're in Europe, again, Europe is much more crowded together, compacted. Its transportation wouldn't be that huge of a deal.
It'd still be an issue. But
whereas in Mad Max it was because it was in Australia. It's a huge place.
Yeah, huge place.
With big, vast distances between various things.
Boy, there's absolutely nothing. Sand and dirt as far as the eye can see. It's very frightening.
But don't even think of it as in survival. There's games like Paranoia.
Yeah.
Where that's a post-apocalyptic game. It's a bit of a satire and an allegory of a game, but it's a dark game if you want it to be.
Well, then there's also... what's the other one that takes place in the future?
Asylum.
Asylum.
There are others. Aaron's done a lot of them. There's Asylum and Chosen are both in the future. Chosen's much more of a space opera. But yeah, Asylum is another dark future game where it's an interesting concept and everything. And I think, but Paranoia gives you that idea of having a utopian society and a dystopian future where you have the domed alpha complex that's who knows where. You know, presumably it's where San Francisco used to be. And then you're dealing with that. I mean, that's playing it more for laughs. Of course, you could play any game more for darkness and rather than laughs, but it's definitely a different type of concept. I think what we're trying to say as far as these types of things is you really need to have an idea of where you're going with it. You don't need to map that out specifically, but don't just go off the cuff with it. Now, we've sort of given you guys a rundown here and there of different games you can look at, but obviously there's the generic settings.
GURPS is very good for sci-fi.
GURPS, the Hero system, there is the D6 system, the D20 Future system.
Actually, D20 Future I kind of liked. It's open enough.
Mm-hmm. There's also BRP. BRP has a sci-fi setting as well.
Oh, really? They do?
Yeah. I can't remember the name of it, but they have it on... they have the actual miniatures listed online. It's more of like an Edgar Rice Burroughs style feature.
Really?
Like there's like the Martian. It's like the Martian something.
We kind of forgot about the Martian invasion.
Martian, I think it's like Martian Chronicles.
Well, there's Martian Chronicles. Great book, weird book. Read it sometime.
I've read it.
But then there's the Martian invasions, like
War of the Worlds.
You know, that's all sci-fi.
The Puppet Masters.
Childhood's End.
Any Robert A. Heinlein book.
What's the one with the pod people?
Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
And again, that's not in the future. That's actually past.
Well, Invasion of the Body Snatchers is set in the past. Mm-hmm. You could set it against the modern easily.
Yeah, they remade
that
many thousands of
times.
Why
do that? Set it back there with the little revolvers and, you know, TV is black and white. And
I mean, in any sci-fi movie with this invasion of the Body Snatchers or alien invasion, where do they typically have it set? They have it set in the middle of nowhere, like, Kansas, where you have... You know, what are you guys going to do? Where are you going to go?
Where are you going to go to? Where are you going to hide?
Inevitably, if an alien spaceship crashes on Earth or comes to invade Earth, it's going to start in a place like this.
Now, one thing we've also been focusing mostly on... thing we've been focusing mostly on is basically humans as the core group. I mean, we haven't said that outright. That seems to be kind of what you know how there's high fantasy? I'd almost say there's high sci-fi. I don't know what you would call it, but alien races. Just crazy alien races.
Or not even have humans in the story.
Don't even have humans. Yeah. Just play some sort of alien race.
Humans are a myth.
Yeah, maybe. Or
they
never
died
met
out.
Humans.
They've
never met them. I mean, you could play... I love playing Grays. Little alien Grays.
Bob.
You know, they're so...
I remember Larry Z.
Larry Z. Yes, they're so interesting, and you could actually then build a whole world based on that. and not have any space travel, but still sci-fi. I mean, it's alien, but it's...
Like on the Grey's Homeworld.
Yeah.
It's just dealing with stuff there.
Things like that. Or it would be interesting to have the greeting, the meeting between the aliens and the humans, but from the alien point of view.
Mm-hmm. My God, these people are barbaric. What are we going to do with them? Let's side with them and put them in as false sense of security, and then we'll come out and...
Then we'll eat them!
Robots?
I mean, serious. Sentient robots.
I'll just re-die robot,
But it's an interesting way to play it. I mean, a post-apocalyptic society, no humans survive. Just the robots.
Just the robots.
I'm not talking about, necessarily the robots wiped us out. The robots just are the only things that survive.
Because humans are very sensitive to things like neutron bombs, which is such high radiation, it basically eradicates all living life.
Just because we don't have it right now, that doesn't mean robots wouldn't create their own societies.
Mm-hmm.
If they're intelligent enough, why not? So,
that's why I tell you to re-die robot.
Yeah.
The Asimov robot series.
And the Foundation.
Foundation series. Foundation.
Those are some tough books to get through, but God, they're good.
Example of what you're talking about, it still has humans on it, but Dune.
Yeah.
Is set on another world.
Oh, Frank Herbert's series, yeah.
That
is an utterly alien environment for us,
that's
too.
That's about the only one I can think of where you're it's entirely, really, an alien species. Not really... I don't know. Do they establish that they're humans?
What?
In Dune.
The Fremen?
Don't really establish...
The people in the books are human.
They look human, but that doesn't mean anything.
He who controls the spice controls the universe. That's all I know.
Yeah, I'm not... I don't know a lot.
Speaking of spice, can I have some of that?
Yes.
Spice must fall. You're not going to fold space again, are you?
Did I fold space before?
Yes.
It was cool.
It may have been cool for you, but I was the one that had to figure out how to get back.
You should fold space again. I need more samples.
Okay. How did I fold space before?
We have no idea. We were hoping you would explain that to us.
Focus on the cookie.
Oh no, is there anything else we can discuss as far as science fiction? Did we not? I'm sure there's stuff we didn't touch on.
Cannibalistic Ewoks, but that's another story.
Those Ewoks. I don't see why people bitch about the Ewoks all the time. I mean...
What happened to all the bodies?
What happened to all those stormtroopers? Those helmets they were using as drums were empty, and they were eating something at that party. So, hello, what were they going to do to those guys when they first showed up?
They were going to cook them.
They were putting them on a spit, weren't they? That's right. Things might be cute and cuddly, but they'll rip your face off if they get ferocious.
One of the funniest things is an Ewok traitor. Just an Ewok. Basically a smuggler. Everybody thinks they're cute and cuddly. He's jumping on the box. Telling him the whole story about how he's stealing everything. While his men are just behind him taking everything. And they're it's a little Ewok. He won't do anything. He's like, bye. You don't understand a word I say. You guys are idiots. Bye. A space-going Ewok. Primitive. They're normally primitive, but give them a blaster. Give them a spaceship.
If you run a Star Wars, if somebody runs a Star Wars game, I'm going to play an Ewok.
Ewoks are awesome.
Ewoks are awesome.
I want to be an Ewok. Be cool.
So are Jawas.
Yeah, your Jawa was awesome. Other Jawas.
And that's what's good. That's what's good about sci-fi, but also about other games. Is the species come up with neat species?
Uh-huh. Well, that touches on the fantasy element
too.
With sci-fi, is you take that and you throw it to an entirely different concept. Yeah.
Sci-fi, you've got to decide: do you want to have aliens or not? And if you don't, do you want to have aliens be that creepiness that make it 1,000 years in the future of Earth? We've colonized our solar system.
Just look at Firefly.
Yeah.
It's an entirely a science fiction setting that's multi-star spanning, but there's no aliens in it.
As of yet.
Or Chosen has no aliens in it.
We're being invaded by
ghosts or
giant
people.
I guess that threat to declare war in the United States got listened to earlier, didn't it?
Well, the CIA listens to all the podcasts.
Homeland Security.
We'll be right back after we figure our way out of this
terrorist. We'll be back after we post bail.
Well, I don't know about you, but I am planning to scream and run.
Okay, guys, roll to hit the Vampire Gazebo. You hit. Hey, guys, what are you doing? Role-playing?
Oh, no, it's that guy.
No, we're not doing anything. We're just watching TV.
Aw, that's too bad, because I brought along my new gaming girlfriend.
Hello, boys. Mind if I max out on charisma?
Whoa! Hey, did you get that hot gaming girlfriend from listening to Gamer the Podcasting?
Yeah, of course!
Gamer the Podcasting does not actually get you a hot gamer girlfriend. What it actually does is give you useful advice on tabletop role-playing, live-action role-playing, and all other forms of role-playing games. Sometimes we talk about other games. We can do whatever we want. It's our own podcast. Visit us on the web at www.gamerthepodcasting.com.
Caution! You are approaching the periphery shield of Vortex 4. Caution! Caution! You are approaching the periphery shield of Vortex 4.
Okay, we're here for the three-parter. Today I'm going to be handling the We've Got Character segment.
I'm going to be handling the actual product review.
And Jeremy's going to be handling the rant as soon as he figures out what he wants to rant about. Well, let's go ahead and get started with the We've Got Character.
We've Got Character.
Well, today on We've Got Character, I'm going to give you a bit of information on an NPC I used in a Paranoia game called Burgess. And now, Burgess was the Screwbot. But Burgess could be used in any kind of a sci-fi setting where you have robots because, well, Burgess is insane. You see, Burgess in the Paranoia game I had was, you know, he was the Screwbot who during the course of his construction was, one of his memory tapes was accidentally replaced with some, like Platoon. And so he would be, you know, all happy and being wonderful doing his Screwbot, you know, his Screwbot stuff, when suddenly he would have a Vietnam flashback and think that there are Charlies up in the trees. And he'd suddenly, his mops and his buckets and his belt sander would suddenly be replaced with a flamethrower, a missile launcher, and a chain gun. Now, this would happen, of course, randomly throughout the game, where the players would, he would get, you know, hit in the head, the robot would get hit real hard in the head, or he'd fall over, or, well, I was just feeling particularly nasty at the time. And he would scream out, "Johnny!" And then lay waste to some corridor somewhere, and then completely forget about what was going on. It was rather interesting, because, of course, this robot was also indestructible. Now, if you're using this in a not-so-comedic setting, it would just be interesting to have a robot with strange programming that is, that he has strange flashbacks or electric dreams at that point. Burgess, of course, spoke like Burgess Meredith from the Rocky movies, and always call people a bum and poke them generally randomly with a mop, you know, some sort of industrial acid cleanser or something like that to get them moving. He was a very impatient robot. But Burgess was a fond NPC that a lot of my players really enjoyed when I had him in Paranoia. And, of course, he never, ever died.
The review.
I wrote next with product review, and today I'm actually going to review a slightly different product than normal. Rather than a book, I'm actually going to talk about specifically a company and their products. The company I'd like to talk about today is Reaper Miniatures, or Reaper Incorporated. Not only do they do miniatures, they do at least three different lines that I know of. There's the Master Series, there's the Dark Haven, and then there's the Warlord Series, which is actually like a game like Warhammer, only, as far as I can tell, much cheaper. And they also do their paint series. They have two separate paint series, which are very good paint. Product items. Well, with their miniatures, pretty much I have miniatures from every different series. I have a couple of Warlord miniatures because they have some really cool single characters there. And I have a boatload of the Dark Haven miniatures, as well as two Master Series miniatures. One, the Lady in the Jungle. And then one is the little demon succubus lady for the Halloween one. I can't remember her name. With the little pumpkin. It's really cool looking.
I remember which one you're talking about.
Yeah, I can't remember her name. Sophie. I think it's Sophie. I'd have to look at the package. I bought it for my fiance. The miniatures themselves are very well crafted. The sculpting jobs on the miniatures is obviously very well done, and the molding for the miniatures is obviously exquisite. The flashing on the miniatures and excess bits of tin, or you know, excess little bits of metal flashing on the miniatures, is pretty much non-existent. The mold seams, you don't see a lot of seam leakage. I've had one miniature where there was any sort of seam leakage, and that was actually at the base of the seam where the actual, on a piece that was attached to the miniature, and it really didn't need to be sanded, but I sanded it anyways. It helps keep down, like, the filing and the cutting with the Sculpey knife and everything else, which, you know, all tools that you can end up damaging yourself with, which is a definite plus for me, because as agile as I am at maneuvering around things with my feet, I drop things, I cut myself with things very easy, which is why my hands look like they've been through World War III. So, the products themselves are very well done. Onto their paints. I like their paints. I use their paints almost exclusively. They're not as cheap as the Citadel paints that we have here. The Citadel paints are $249 here. The Reapers are $299, so it's slightly more expensive per paint, but there's a lot more paint on top of that. They have a primer material in them, which allows you to blend the paints more easily, so you can actually do shading very easy when you're trying to blend two paints as they're wet on the miniature. You can shade it very easy. I have never had any problems shading with this paint, as you can attest to on the Chimera that I'm working on currently with the shading from the lion legs into the goat legs. Very nice paint. Can't emphasize that enough. I don't have any of their paint brushes, and I don't have any of their actual miniature kit parts to file and to detach pieces, but they come highly recommended from everybody I've talked to. I researched with other miniature painters and builders in the area before I started purchasing their products to get a rough idea before buying something and finding out I disliked it. And, you know, still, it's one of those things that's basically an opinion when you get to it, and I actually very much enjoyed it once I actually got a hold of the products. They have some incredible dragons. If you can get a hold of the dragons, they're very well sculpted. And on top of that, an extra bonus is they're not exorbitantly expensive. You can go in and buy two dragons and the standard blister packs and a couple of figures, like a couple of standard human figures, for about $60, versus you can go and you can buy two figures from the Warhammer line and spend $40.
Yep.
So
they have a really good website. We'll put in the show notes. Yeah, it has the Reaper Miniatures website has a miniature finder, which is really nice.
And you can actually see a picture of the miniature before you go out and buy it.
And you can sort of customize the search for a specific type of figure that you're looking for. It's really nicely done, and I would definitely agree. Their figures are by far the best bang for the buck. It has definitely a good price for what you get. They're good figures. They're great beginner figures because they're cheap, and some are easier to paint than others, but they have a great line.
Yeah, the detail on them can be exquisite. Like this, they have that barbarian wearing the leather armor with all the there's intricate detail work on the actual leather sculpted into the miniature.
They're quite good, and they're quite reasonably priced.
Yeah, average figure cost for a standard figure is $4.99. For a single figure, you can get packs of three. They're usually $7.99. The dragons go all the way up to, if you get the box dragons, they go up to $49.99. And those dragons usually have a wingspan of about 9 inches from the base of the body to where the end of the wing tip, with an average length following the entire length of the body from nose to tail of about 13 inches. So they're fairly large.
As far as their paints, they actually have a very nice selection of paints that are all very reasonably priced as well. We've done some painting with them, and they do the job. They're not bad at all.
I gotta agree with the price, definitely. The Warhammer miniatures are nice, but price wise, these miniatures are much better, especially for starters, beginner. Because miniature gaming, which we'll discuss at some point, is overwhelming at times.
Yeah,
and if you just want a single figure, I recommend, you know, going them out and purchasing one from them. Now, from your local gaming store, obviously.
Obviously.
Now, keep in mind, we're not biased against Citadel Game Miniatures. Mm-hmm. We understand that
we're
the price...
Poor. Mm-hmm. Well, he is, but...
Well, at least I understand the reason why they're so expensive is the fact that most of them are actually imported. The company, Citadel, is, you know...
But as a poor gamer...
A British company.
We have to save money.
And so there are import costs on that. So we buy for the pretty much the cheapest denominator when it comes to things like that. On top of that, since the Darkhaven line is a generic line, they tend to stick to the general descriptions for monsters and stuff. So if you buy a gnoll, it looks, you know, like a hyena headed thing with like a cool like crest of fur down the back of his head.
They don't have the actual any D&D licenses or any licensees as far as I know. No. And you can buy like a Cthulhu-esque thing. I think it's the Eldritch Demon, looks like a little star spawn.
Yeah.
They get away with it, you know, but they're good for the price, they're good figures as long as you understand you're not getting the Warhammer quality stuff. Yeah. But you're still getting
They're still good quality
figures for the The Rant. Okay. And now we are on to the rant with the J-Man.
So, I hate it when you're in a game, you're walking down the road, everything's fine, when suddenly the alarms, the fire alarms, and the bomb alarms all go off in the city, and the clouds kind of cover the city as something large starts to head down closer and closer to the ground, and you see this metal disc, and suddenly the death rays start vaporizing people around you, and they're exploding.
This is Ethan from the future, and this rant went kind of weird, as you can obviously start seeing. So what I've gone and did is I went back in time, and I recorded Jeremy ranting on something else, and I'm going to play that instead, because Jeremy, you know, is weird and stuff.
When a game is scheduled for a certain time, people shouldn't show up to... and a half hours late without calling. Because if we start the game on time, or about on time, when we're supposed to, everybody who's missing will miss out on the first portion of it, or it will interrupt what we're already doing, again, causing distractions. So if you can't make it to a game, that is, every weekend, set at a certain time, you should call and say, hey, I'm going to be late. Not let the GM have to track you down.
Right, yes.
Because then they're more likely to heal your character and use the shredder.
Yeah, being late to a game it does piss me off, too. It's not... I want my players to, like, let me know and say, hey, I'm guilty of this myself, procrastinating and not sending out emails and calling people when I should, but it's the... You set a time for a game when it should be, and, you know, it's just common courtesy to let people know if you're going to be late, instead of us having to track you down and say, hey, it's, you know, you're half an hour late, where are you at? It gets on my nerves. I'm not a huge fan of that myself, but...
Depends on the frequency of the happening. If you have a player who's habitually late, it might be a good idea to take them aside and talk to them about it and find out why they're habitually late. But if it's, you know, an occasional thing, like once in a while, you know, it's no big deal, it's going to happen.
I think all we're asking is that they call and let us know.
Yeah, that would definitely be a good thing to do.
Yes, and I'd have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for these blasted kids and their dogs.
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I never look at the big picture because I can't stand watching horror movies.
I try to avoid sitting here thinking of what to say next. I like to make it off the cuff, spontaneous. It doesn't work.
All I want now, and all I ever really wanted ever since I was a little kid, is total omnipotence. Is that too much to ask?
I could even get out on a limb of wild speculation. I know, pretty odd thing to do for this podcast. I could fit your brain in a hollow pea, I swear. That's just two clear cuts, two black and white. It's all point of view, don't you understand? It's point of view.
Oh, man! Every other podcast is better than mine!
That's enough. Whining time is over.
No doubt, if you were paying attention, you detected a minor tinge of paranoia.
But this is supposed to be fun. I'm supposed to be doing this for fun. And if it means exhibiting false enthusiasm, I'm not above that. So I'm just going to apologize now and let's move on.
So what specifically are you worried about, Adam?
You would probably want to grab me around the neck with your arm and pull my head off. Did that make any sense?
My pants are haunted! My pants are haunted!
This is Ethan again from the future, and I'm here with some feedback for our random encounters section. We were gone for quite a while because of, obviously, Christmas and New Year's. Tried to get an episode up, but, you know, I was up in Illinois seeing my family. Hi, family. Then I came back down and was just a general lazy person for about a week. You guys can understand. We're gamers. We dig it. Anyway, the feedback we have today is from Jeff, who runs a podcast over on the Podbean called The Tome, which is a good little show. I haven't had much of a chance to listen to it, but by the looks of it, it's very D&D-centric. But he dropped us a line, said, "Hey, I ran across your podcast when I noticed that people who subscribe to my show also listen to yours on iTunes. I gave episode 1 a listen, and so far I'm really enjoying the show. I was wondering if you'd have a chance to check out my show, The Tome," which is at thetome.podbean.com. I'll put that in our notes. "And if you might be interested in doing a cross-promotion. Anyway, look forward to hearing from you and keep up the good work." Well, I've talked to Jeff a bit, and we're going to try to get something going just as soon as, you know, we get out of this whole holiday days. But look forward to that, and take a look at his show. And again, thanks for the really nice work. Want to point people also to our forums again at the Fistful of Comics. I want to thank CyberNerd for pointing out that he might be the whole third listener that that we have right now. But we're growing. But thanks, CyberNerd. You're the man, and I also see you're a massive defender like me. But imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, so thank you, CyberNerd. Before I let you all go today, I do want to point out a few things. One, we do still have our forums, and they're still rather bare, but CyberNerd did post on them, so thanks. Jeremy is also wanting more ideas on the planner travel device that he is devising. So if you have anything for that, just go ahead and send it to thousandmonkeysproductions@gmail.com. And, of course, you're always welcome to drop us a line, and I believe you know how, but I'll run it again.
You can visit us on the web at canadiancrusaders.fistfulofcomics.com. You can visit our website there, leave us an audio. You can call our voicemail line at 206-984-4122. Leave a message on the Frapper map. You can drop us an email at thousandmonkeysproductions@gmail.com. And you could also just visit the forums on Fistful of Comics. We have our own little section there.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
Expect no mercy if you head out west.
Gamers Haven is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike 2.5 license, and is hosted by the fine folks at www.fistfulofcomics.com and is a Thousand Monkeys production.
Now there's just one rule, and it's go eye for an eye. And if you swallow the drone, you'll be fast to die.
It'll work.
No. I won't do that to him. Everyone has their opinion, and Ethan is allowed to be wrong in this case.
That's basically what he did.
Charlie's in the
then table. I had a table that I'd roll on to see what randomly he poked you with, and sometimes it was a mop or, you know, a broom or the belt sander or or industrial acid or, you know, a hot poker, you know, anything remotely you could use for cleaning. Have you tested out the death ray?
Maybe tomorrow.
Yeah, we don't need mercury. Check it out on mercury.
Yeah, mercury's fairly useless. You can just blow that up. It's an actual planet. Can't blow up Pluto, though. It's not a planet anymore.
How is that a rant?
I don't know!
You know, I've never seen much of his other work, though. I should go check that out.
He was in the first Batman movie.
Yeah, he was.
Was he?
He was Grissom's boss. Grissom's boss. Napier's boss.
Oh.
If you know any other movies he's in, please email us.
Yes.
Or we could just go to IMDb and find out.
We could, but they need to email us their ideas and such.
Well, did you guys see that the director's cut version of King Kong comes out Tuesday?
Yeah, it was like 38
minutes of additional footage. 2,047 additional CGI scenes. I'm going...
So instead of the movie feeling like it's 6 hours long, it'll feel like it's you 12. Know, 940 hours long.
Yeah. I need a high-powered rifle with a scope. I'm going to go clean out some of these problem creatures we have. Back to sci-fi, though.
Yes.
Then you should use a laser. A giant death ray.
That's not finished yet. You took several of the pieces to build your planar device.
Actually, there's one built on the dark side of the moon. We have a mosquito. Do we have, like, a man crab?
So the chupacabra can eat all the goats, so the mosquito gets the shepherd.
And his family.
And his neighbors.
We could have started Jurassic Park. How are we supposed to get more Quatlus?
Oh, I just make the print them off on my computer. I mean, we mint them. We have our own mint.
We're our own country. Well,
we need to create our own currency for our country.
Quatlus.
We already have it, Quatlus.
But as with Star Wars, everything always goes back to Porkins. Who is Darth Vader? Porkins. Who is Boba Fett?
Porkins. That is in every episode.
There you go.
Bastard.
Who started the Clone Wars?
Porkins.
There might be a... we have a panda? We have a sad panda?
I fed the panda to the mosquito.
Why did you... They're a endangered species.
He's not hungry. And the panda was just sort of sitting there.
His name was Lickping.
Lickping?
Lickping.
Ew.
Poor panda.
I think I put the panda out of its misery then.
I was going to breed her, man. We're going to bring back the panda population. I haven't seen these things yet. Will I be mollified when I see them?
I keep the lights off.
No, our horror series is done. We don't have to make sanity checks anymore.
That's cool.
Just say no to giant man-eating bugs.
Yes.
Except for mosquito.
He's just a bloodsucker. Yeah, we saved the mosquito. We trashed the time machine.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Which is scary because more than 50% of the players who play are women.
That's okay. I'm not falling into that crack, so. Nope.
In case you can't tell, we're consummate World of Warcraft fans.
Except,
well, two of us are.
Except for me. I'm a holdout, and I'm not going to get into it.
Pretty soon we're going to abduct him and stitch his eyelids open.
Anyone ever seen A Clockwork Orange? They're going to try that with me.
Yeah.
We'll just rebuild it. We'll have the technology.
Well, the sun will be gone,
too.
We'll rebuild that, too.
We'll build a giant wooden planet and put, monks on it.